Last week, if you were here, we talked about blood. We did that because of where we are. We're headed back into the life of Christ study, looking at Jesus now as crucifixion. After we got through with that, the next logical step for me would be to look at some preliminary information about crucifixion. So that's what we want to look at tonight. Then next Wednesday, that is the fifth Wednesday, so we should have, I'm thinking Steve is going to take responsibility for that. Need to verify that because of where he's been as far as traveling. And after the fifth Wednesday next week, then we'll get into some textual matters. But again, blood, crucifixion, skip a Wednesday because of the fifth Wednesday service, and then we'll go back into some of the specifics and have about 30 classes left before we get through with the life of Christ. So thinking about crucifixion, when you think about the Lord's death, crucifixion, it is certainly a key part of the gospel. You may remember from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 1 through 4, Paul tells the Corinthians, I came to you, and really where I started was the death of Christ. I want to talk about the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Christ. We're in the book of Acts as far as the Sunday morning class, and as we start looking at some of the preaching that was done in the book of Acts, what do we find? Jesus came into the world, and what happened? He died. He was crucified. He was put to death. So this was a big part of first century life as far as what people were hearing about, what people were talking about. And it's also one of the greatest events in human history. When you look at Islam, the Muslim faith is certainly growing. And if you were to go back and read in the Quran, this would be from Surah, that would be chapter 4, verses 157 to 158. It denies that Jesus was crucified. But even though the Muslim faith denies that Jesus was crucified, is there any value in knowing that the Quran denies that Jesus was crucified? Any benefit in knowing that?
Well, since the Quran is a false religion, them saying that he wasn't crucified might seem like it's a good possibility he was.
Okay, that could be argued. Anything else that comes to mind? What at least are they acknowledging?
That he existed.
And they're acknowledging that there at least are some claims about what? That he was crucified. So it's significant that this book, which is adhered to by millions and millions of people, number one, it mentions a crucifixion. Number two, it mentions Jesus. And number three, its denial shows that it merits enough attention to at least mention it. Now, when we think about the Lord's crucifixion, I think when you look at the men who have given some talks around the Lord's table, they've done a very good job. But some of what we're going to deal with tonight is probably better dealt with in a Bible class, maybe not so much in a sermon, and probably not so much when it comes to the Lord's table. Stories told about a young lady. She heard the preacher speak about the Lord's crucifixion, and this is a quote. She said, that sermon didn't increase my love for Jesus. It made me sick to my stomach. Now, I think that's something to think about, because as you start looking at the details concerning the crucifixion, it's not pretty. When you start looking at the crucifixion, there's some really ugly, there's some detestable, there's some gross stuff as far as what happened when people were put to death and when they were scourged in this way. So we need to be familiar with the details, but when we're dealing with an assembly where small children are present, that's something that we may want to go ahead and temper the details with. When you start looking at this, if you ever teach a Bible class, you could teach a Bible class based on some of the words associated with the crucifixion. For example, the nails. I've not done this, but there have been some people who have said the nails associated with the cross. They nailed down the faithfulness of God. It nailed together Christ and the church. It nailed shut the door to Judaism. And it nailed together baptism and the blood of Christ. They've done a similar thing sometimes with the word cross. They've said you can discuss the cross of love. You could use passages like John 3:16, Revelation 1:5, a cross of sacrifice, a cross of peace, a cross of joy. So there are some key words associated with the cross of Christ that you could use to either preach a sermon or to teach a Bible class. Moving down a little bit in my notes, thinking about the cross, it is, as you think about different ways to execute people, one of the worst ways to put someone to death. Most of us, I think, have probably seen someone who was put to death. Maybe it's a TV show, and they're going to electrocute the guy, and we've seen images where they shock somebody for, you know, maybe 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes, and the guy's not dead. You know, he's got kind of got the shakes, or you've got smoke coming out of his head, those kinds of things, and you look at that, and it's not a pleasant picture. Well, crucifixion was far, far worse than that. As you go back and you study, you find that crucifixion had been around since at least 500 BC. Now, that's significant because before Jesus comes into the world, people had been crucified for about 500 years. From what we can tell, the Persians started the process of crucifixion, but who comes along and perfects it? Anybody want to take a guess? The Romans. And they, of course, were elite military people, and by the time they came along, it had been done for a while, and they really take it to a new height. Carol or Teresa, do you have a thought? I thought when he was... Okay, flash to hand. Okay. When you think about crucifixion, because it was so cruel, it was a punishment that was generally reserved for slaves, foreigners, revolutionaries, and the vilest of criminals. If you're a Roman, Roman law generally protected its citizens from a crucifixion, but there were exceptions to that, and one exception would be a deserter. If you are a soldier and you're guilty of desertion, then again, you might even face a firing squad in modern times. Certainly that was the punishment in times past, but crucifixion could be the punishment for you in years past. Now, we do know what happened with Jesus before he was crucified. Anybody remember? He was beaten, and that is a detail from Mark chapter 15 and verse 5, or 15:15 rather, and some other people had that as well. I've mentioned this in classes and I think maybe in a couple sermons. Over in 1 Peter chapter 2, about verse 24, Peter said, by his, anybody remember? By his, what are we healed? By his stripes. That's plural. But if you were to look at that in the original text, it's not plural. It is singular in the original text. So literally it reads, by his stripe we're healed. Well, that doesn't mean that Jesus was struck one time. What it does mean is that Jesus was struck, his back was beaten, he was slashed to the point, his flesh was ripped to the point where if you wanted to go and count the number of lashes, if you wanted to say we can separate the number of blows, count them up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that would not have been possible. He was beaten and beaten and beaten, and his backside and perhaps some of his front side was just ripped up to the point where you could not separate the stripes. When you think about how the beating was done, and this is probably not new information to a lot of us, we know about the leather thongs that were attached to something like a piece of wood. Those leather thongs would have been of varying lengths. You would have had small bits of bone attached to them. There are some other sources. I don't know that you'd say a ball bearing, but sometimes there were small steel balls, maybe bigger than a ball bearing. And if you've got somebody that has that kind of whip and they are lashing your back with it, as I say, different lengths of the leather thongs, and you've got sharp bone, you've got those iron balls, it's going to cut, it's going to tear, it's going to do some significant damage. Victims would have been stripped of their clothing. Some sources suggest, and it probably depended on the set of circumstances, there are some people who believe that victims were tied upright. There are others who believe that they were stooped over some kind of pole. You might even envision something like a rock, and then flogged on the back, the buttocks, and the legs. Let's head somebody back to the Old Testament, Psalm 129. Let's take a look at Psalm 129, verse 3. This is one of the passages that pointed forward, ultimately, to what Jesus was going to experience. 129 Psalm, verse 3. We'll have that. All right, Gary, we'll ask you to read that in just a minute. I'll give you this other point. The lashes often tore the skin, the muscles, and sometimes they expose the bones and internal body organs. Now think about that. Exposing perhaps body organs, exposing bones, you are literally ripping the flesh off a person's body. So this was a very, very drastic thing to do, and you're not even to the cross yet. Psalm 129, verse 3.
Flowers plowed upon my back, they made long their furrows.
Okay, so if you're just reading that, you might think, well, okay, what does that really refer to? Ultimately, it points forward to Christ and shows the kind of damage that it could be. You've probably heard as well, and this is true, that if you're beaten in that kind of way, could you die? Yeah, and there certainly were cases where people did not make it past that. When you think about the number of lashes, that was not limited. And, you know, if you've got that job, that might be something that you enjoy, you're a masochist, and you get started, and again, there's really no reason to stop. Women were generally exempt from that kind of treatment, so if you were a lady, that would have been one of the things that you would have avoided, at least for the most part. And the people who did have that experience, they've been described as people who had flesh literally hanging from their bodies, and it almost looked like shredded meat. So if you've had maybe some hamburger that you have ground up with your hands, some raw hamburger, that's the best image that I can give of that. The wounds could be so severe and so deep, I'm giving you a quote here, that arterial blood sometimes spurted with each beat of the victim's heart. Now think about that. You've been beaten so much that as your heart beats, there's a spurt of blood. And so, whatever or wherever they hurt you at with that kind of thing, it was probably going to be a very, very bad experience. Anything that you want to add or ask over the beatings? Carol?
Did you say that the lashes were unnumbered? They were
correct.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be 40 was supposed to be the maximum.
For the Jews. For the Jews, if you're a Jew.
And it was limited to 40.
Yes. Yes, exactly right. But if you were a Roman doing the beating, then there was no limit. Anybody else on that part of what we've talked about? Bonnie?
Is beating and scourging the same thing?
Biblically, I would put them, well, I want to say yes, but you could have some exceptions. For example, when Paul talked about beatings, over in the 2 Corinthian letter, I don't know that you would necessarily say that those beatings were scourging, because he talks about being beaten with rods, for example. So if you think about, let's say that today a policeman has his nightstick or his baton, he might break a leg, he might break an arm, and that might really hurt. But that's not going to rip your flesh like the scourging. So I'm going to be safe and say that sometimes they can mean the same, but not always. And here, if we use the word beating for Jesus, for our discussion, just take scourging and put that in as a synonym for tonight's class.
I heard some people say that scourging, and I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, scourging is a beating, but not all beatings would be scourgings.
Okay. Yeah.
That it?
Scourging's worse.
Yes, yeah. Okay, let's talk about a couple of the points here. As bad as scourgings were, it could be worse. You could be crucified after that, and that's, of course, what happened to Jesus. As far as I can tell, and I think this is probably something that nobody could have done, especially if they were scourged, when you think about the cross, you have two parts. You've obviously got the upright part, and then you've got the crossbeam. That crossbeam, from what we can tell, weighed between 75 and 125 pounds. Now, that's a pretty good amount of weight for anybody to carry, especially if they've been scourged. I don't have a weight for you as far as the upright piece, but I imagine that would have weighed a whole lot more. So somebody trying to carry all that weight probably would have been impossible unless you're like Goliath. But I believe that Jesus probably was tasked with carrying that smaller piece, that crossbar, the T-bar, if you will, to the execution site. When you go back and you look at how this worked, there was a procession. There was a centurion. There were some soldiers with him. And maybe today we have, in some respects, a similar thing. You would have someone in that procession. They would carry a little card, and that card would have the victim's name and the victim's crime. Now, you begin to see that reflected in Jesus' life, don't you? What did they put in the cross? Greek, Hebrew, Latin. Anybody remember? Yeah, they put up that sign. They put up that placard. Well, more than likely, somebody was carrying that sign, or if it was in, you know, on multiple pieces of wood, carrying those pieces of wood as Jesus was taken to the cross. You may have seen, I've not done this, but there have been some preachers who have. They have in a sermon or maybe in a Bible class, they brought in some spikes and said this is probably what it was like as far as a spike that was used to put Jesus on the cross. The best that we can tell is that the length would have been between about 5 and 7 inches and maybe about 3/8 of an inch across. Now, if you think about those dimensions, anybody ever seen a spike similar to that?
A lot of times your gutter spikes are pretty long, too, probably about 5 inches.
Okay, yeah, a gutter spike would be certainly in that category. Anything else? Yeah, railroad spikes. Now, they may be a little bit wider than 3/8 of an inch. I've not measured one, but when you begin to think about those spikes, whether it's a railroad spike or whether it is going to be that gutter spike, it's kind of like, I wouldn't want one of those, let alone enough to affix my body to a cross. There is some disagreement as far as whether the victim's hands, when they were attached to the cross, whether the spikes were going through the hand or the wrist. I'm not sure that it would really matter for me. That's going to be painful whichever way it went. And then you also have, Gary, you want to go back to the Old Testament if you're not there? Let's bring you back to the book of Psalms. Psalm 22, verse 16. The convicted person's feet were also fastened to the cross, and you see that reflected in Psalm chapter 22 and verse 16. Blood was lost, certainly during the process, but most survived being nailed to the cross and eventually died from slow suffocation. Let's also get somebody lined up for Mark chapter 15 and verse 44. Will somebody read that as well? Mark 15, verse 44. You have a minute to get there. All right, Bonnie. Okay, Gary, let's go back to Psalm 22.
For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet.
Okay, so again, looking forward ultimately to Christ, they've pierced my hands, they've pierced my feet. Jesus knew what was going to happen, and that's precisely what did happen. Some form of the spike that we talked about was used to affix him to the cross. And then, as far as how long he was on the cross, Bonnie, Mark chapter 15, verse 44. Okay, now, do you think Pilate was familiar with crucifixions? Sure. And how long was Jesus on the cross? Anybody remember? About 6 hours. Now, what's it say about Pilate? He marveled. Was he marveling because it was slow or fast as far as Jesus' death? Fast. Well, what can you infer from that? Pilate's familiar with how people die. He's familiar with how long roughly people stay on the cross. Jesus is on the cross for 6 hours. He's really surprised, amazed at that. So what does that tell you? He knew that a lot of people would stay how long on the cross? Yeah, a good bit longer than that. And there are some reports as you look at that, that sometimes they stayed there for, you know, a few days. And, you know, that would really be a bad thing, but it was a very, very ugly, a very, very brutal process. All right, let's deal with something else, and then we'll stop and see if there's something that you want to talk about. Modesty. You go to the doctor's office. How modest can you be sometimes? Take off all your clothes. You know, got to be, you know, naked at least this part of the body or that part of the body. So we have some times in life where modesty is not that big of a deal. You're going to be crucified. You think the Romans are going to be concerned about modesty? No. You might get a loincloth, or you might be up on the cloth, or you might be on the cross naked. We simply don't know what happened with Jesus. I know that there are a lot of pictures which portray the Lord as having a loincloth. Maybe he had one of those on, maybe not. But whether you have on even just a little bit of clothing, think about what's taking place in the cross, especially if it's hot. You're outside. Don't have a lot of clothing on. I mean, obviously you're not half naked, but you know, maybe you got shorts on, you got on a short sleeve shirt. What's going to come after you sometimes? Well, okay, let's add to it a little bit. Flies, gnats, ants. Who knows what little creature is going to come after you? Now that's if you're not bleeding. But if you are bleeding, you've had your hands or your arms punctured, you've had your legs punctured, you've had your head punctured, you've been, you know, beaten up, your back is you know, one bloody mess. You think some creatures are going to be interested in you? Oh yeah. You think some creatures might burrow into your skin? Yeah. And you don't have any clothing on to serve as any kind of defense. So bad enough to be scourged, bad enough to be crucified. Now you're out there with even the critters. You know, some birds want to come down and peck at you, whatever that might be. You're really at the mercy of nature. And the Romans were not really interested in trying to make you comfortable, and they also were not really interested in trying to hide what was being done. Why were they not interested in trying to hide what was taking place? As we get into some of the texts, we'll see that, you know, Jesus is crucified in an area that seems to be at least somewhat public. You know, people were there, and, you know, you got a road there that was very possibly a place that was a very public spot. Steve?
They wanted to make sure that as many people knew about this, and they wanted to make a point and to embarrass, you know, whatever.
You're the example. If you get out of line, what's going to happen to you? You're going to be next. So this was a great way to show people that they needed to stay in line. It really served as a public warning. Now, let's think about this a little bit more. It's been a little while since we're in the life of Christ, but feast time, what time is it for the Jews? What did Jesus celebrate with his disciples? Upper room, remember? You gave the answer. Passover. All right, who was coming to Jerusalem during Passover time? Everybody. So you got a bunch of people in Jerusalem. Jesus is crucified this very public way. Even if you didn't witness the actual crucifixion, would you say that this was widespread? Yeah. As it said a little bit later in the book of Acts, this was not done in a corner. So his death, Jesus' death, was anything but a secret. I'll give you this quote and then stop and see if there's something you want to add or ask. The time a victim spent on the cross was wholly determined by the constitution of the victim, but death rarely ensued before 36 hours had elapsed. 36 hours was not uncommon to be on the cross. History says some stayed alive for several hours on the cross, surviving terrible injuries, and were then removed. There were also cases or instances of crucified victims having their deaths hastened by either having their legs broken or by receiving a hard blow under the armpit before crucifixion. Again, remember the problem of asphyxiation, so the armpits are broken and you can't hold yourself up. Birds and elements ravaged the corpses after death unless families went to a Roman judge and requested the body. One unusual point about Jesus' crucifixion is the very metal he had created and placed on the ground was used to make nails to pound through his hands and feet. Now, if you've never thought about that, I think that is a great thought. You know, here's the Lord. He's been involved in putting the earth together, and now people who want to put him to death are taking something that he helped provide to end his life. Anything that you might add or ask? Gary?
Along with the sign that was posted to humiliate him, being in a public spot would add more humiliation. Having very little or no clothing would add more humiliation. So I'm sure the Romans all knew about those things too.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, this was being done for 500 years before Jesus comes along, so all the tricks of the trade. If the Persians hadn't figured it out, the Romans did. And they were interested in keeping people in line. They were stationed there in the area of Jerusalem, and it was their job to ensure that the people towed the line, and crucifixion was one of the great things to help them encourage that to take place.
Oh, well, not jumping ahead, because we haven't covered this shit, but they had a mock trial.
I think when you look at Pilate, he's willing to come out and talk to the Jews. I'm inclined to believe from that, Steve, that this was something that was not a first for him. That because of his position, because crucifixion was a big deal, because the Romans used it to keep people in line, that, as I say, he had been in that position before. You've got Barabbas, for example. He's familiar with him. What would have happened to Barabbas? Well, I think very likely he would have ended up on the cross. So today we do it in a slightly different way. In the States, who's going to be involved or who's going to know about a capital crime? Putting somebody to death.
Judge and jury?
Well, yeah, but thinking about it state by state.
Prosecutor?
Well, yeah, but even above him. The governor, right? The governor. So the governor can go ahead and be the one who says, okay, we're going to have a stay of execution or proceed. And I think Pilate would be serving in a somewhat similar capacity there. Okay, let's think about all the things that we talked about and compare that with some of the artwork. When you look at some of the artwork, and, you know, my grandma, God bless her soul, she had a lot of good qualities. And up there, I can still remember the apartment. She had the picture of Jesus, had the Last Supper in this room, and has Jesus on the cross in another room. And every time I went to see her, those pictures just kind of pull at you. You know, you're kind of looking at them because they are so distinct. So if you have those pictures, I'm not faulting you or saying that you need to take them down. But I am saying that when you look at those pictures, you, as far as I can tell, don't really get a good depiction of what was taking place when it comes to the cross of Christ. I mean, we're talking about pain, which was indescribable. We're talking about pieces of wood which were not smooth. Anybody ever had the pain from carpal tunnel down there in the median nerve? Your hands tingle. You know, you're on a repetitive job, maybe in the factory. Okay, if you've had that, you know, can you imagine that median nerve? You've now got a spike or several spikes going through that. It's kind of like, wow, I had pain before. Maybe you've got some numbness and some tingling and so forth. Yikes, that's super painful. And then you have some other nerves. There's another nerve, it would be the ulna nerve. One source compared that to taking a pair of pliers, and that would be the funny bone, pinching that as tightly as we can. And also made this note that the word excruciating, literally he said excruciating means out of the cross. Excruciating means out of the cross. Think of that. They needed to create a new word because there was nothing in the language that could describe the intense anguish caused by crucifixion. So when you think about dying on the cross, this is about the worst pain that anybody could possibly experience, and that's what Jesus experienced. Went on to say the suffering of death by crucifixion was intense, especially in hot climates. Severe local inflammation, coupled with an insignificant bleeding of the jagged wounds, produced traumatic fever, which was aggravated by the exposure to the heat of the sun, the strained position of the body, and insufferable thirst. The wounds swelled about the rough nails, and the torn and lacerated tendons and nerves caused excruciating agony. The arteries of the head and stomach were surcharged with blood, and a terrific throbbing headache ensued. So sometimes people say, I've got to go to bed because the headache's so bad. But that's just one of the many problems that Jesus likely had. The mind was confused and filled with anxiety and dread foreboding. The victim of crucifixion literally died a thousand deaths. And I mean, this is off the charts as far as what Jesus did for us. Anybody want to add or ask anything before I say a few more points? Okay. When you start looking at crucifixion in the Bible, you have it described by at least seven different words. I mentioned this in the book of Acts, but there are at least seven Greek verbs in the book of Acts which describe Jesus' death. To crucify, to slay, to kill, to handle severely, to hang, and those who participated in this act are called murderers. Now, in that book, and you don't have to get very far, you just have to go up to Acts chapter 7 and verse 52. So within seven chapters, you have seven different words used to describe how Jesus was put to death. That tells me that that was a big, big deal, and they were talking about it a lot. All right, anybody else before I switch topics here? Let's think about Jesus' weakened condition. Let's take a look at John chapter 19 and verse 17. And let's see. I think that'll be it for now. John chapter 19 and verse 17. Who wants to take care of that for us in just a minute? All right, Lois has it. Thank you. That's great.
19:17.
All right, so Jesus goes out, he's carrying the cross. Now, if you listen to some people, or maybe this is something that you yourself believe, if you listen to some people talk about Jesus, what do they say? Oh, here was Jesus, he'd been beaten severely, he'd had that terrible scourging, and he's got this cross beam on his shoulder, 75 to 125 pounds. You know, he starts walking out there a little bit, and what's he do? He collapses. Or some other people would say he stumbles. Would you believe that's not in the Bible? I think that would shock some people to find that that is not in the Bible, but it doesn't say that Jesus stumbled. Now, where do you think we get that from?
Movies.
Well, that would be one source. You go and see some movies about the Lord and what happened to him. There he is. You know, he collapses, so it's in the movie. It's got to be true. Where else might we get that from? Well, how about some of our hymns? We have a hymn, Follow Me, and it contains these words. The cross became so heavy, he fell beneath the load. Now, I like that song. It is a great song. But if you sing that song, and you get from that song that Jesus fell beneath the load, you're getting more from that song than is in the Bible. Now, could that be true, that Jesus stumbled? Yeah. Is it true that Simon comes along and helps him? Yes. But could Simon have helped him for a reason other than Jesus stumbling? Yeah. Okay. Would he need to be pressed into service because Jesus stumbled? No. What would some other reasons be possibly? Oh, I think that's an obvious reason that they want to go there, they want to get it over with, and we've got a time schedule perhaps, and let's speed it up. And if Jesus, maybe they were concerned that he was going to stumble. So there are multiple reasons there. But if you have been under the impression that Jesus fell beneath the load and that is your mental image, maybe when you partake of the Lord's Supper, again, that may be exactly right, but that may not be correct. Anything you want to say there before I give you a couple quotes? Okay. One source, he conducted an interview with an MD who was also a PhD. And the fellow who was doing the interview said this man had the medical and scientific credentials to explain the crucifixion, as well as the ability to discuss this event dispassionately, as well as accurately. During this interview, the doctor spoke about hypovolemic shock, Hypo means low, vol refers to volume, and emic means blood. So hypovolemic shock means the person is suffering the effects of losing a large amount of blood, and Jesus surely did lose a lot of blood. This doctor noted how this does four things. First, the heart races to try to pump blood that isn't there. Second, the blood pressure drops, causing fainting or collapse. Third, the kidneys stop producing urine to maintain what volume is left. And fourth, the person becomes very thirsty as the body craves fluids to replace the lost volume. The doc further claimed Jesus was in hypovolemic shock as he staggered up the road to the execution site at Calvary carrying the horizontal beam of the cross. Now, again, I think that it's very possible, if not likely, that Jesus stumbled. But we don't have that information stated specifically in Scripture. When you think about Jesus making this trip, and everything that is stated about that indicates the Lord went willingly, you have the great emotional stress that he underwent. We have him with the disciples there at the quote-unquote Last Supper. He's there in the garden. You've got the beatings that he suffered. You have the small amount of sleep that he suffered the night before. He's walking more than 2 miles because of the trials. I don't know that too many people could have undergone that and borne up under that. So when we talk about Jesus bearing the cross, that's really an understatement. It's just hard to believe that anybody, unless they were really fully, totally committed to this activity, would follow through. It also tells you something, I think, about Jesus as far as a man. He was somebody who was not weak. He was someone who perhaps because of his upbringing, you might say a very sturdy guy. I would suspect that he was in good health because he did what he did. And you can also see, I think, why. Had the Lord been 50 or 60, you think this might have been more than he could have taken? I think it probably might have been too much for somebody who's 50 or 60. But you have somebody who's, mid-30s, good time in life when they still have a lot of strength, a lot of health, and so forth, and it's going to tax them, probably to about their full limit. But it's possible, and he was willing to do that. So when you partake of the Lord's Supper, if you can recall some of these details and think about it, it really does remind you the love that God had, the love that Christ had, and the magnificence of the sacrifice that was given on our behalf. Once again, anything that you want to add or ask? Gary?
Thinking about why they would have assigned someone to assist Christ in carrying the cross, this whole thing is done very rapidly, trials through the night and all this, and so it would seem to me that it would be in their interest to hurry and speed this along, one, because the crowd is crazy and they could lose control at any minute, or two, if they really are scared that Christ is divine, that maybe he'll come out of this. So let's hurry up and kill him before that happens.
Yeah, I agree that they had multiple reasons to say, let's get this over with as quickly as possible. There may have been some other occasions where they kind of wanted to play with the guy a little bit. And you, for example, you might have a young kid catches a fish and he just kind of wants to reel him in and let him go. And then you've got the other angler, he wants to bring the fish right in. So they may have played with other guys, but I agree that with Jesus, for all the reasons that you gave and maybe some more, it was, let's wrap this up as quickly as we can. And we don't want any problems from him. We certainly don't want any problems from the crowd. That it? Okay, let's talk about the wounds. Jesus was wounded in 5 different ways. I'm no medical expert, but these are some things I think that you can find from some medical sources. When you think about the word contusion, sometimes you'll go to the doctor or you go to the hospital or you hear about someone having a contusion. A contusion is a wound where it's discolored and maybe you've got some bruising. So not the worst kind of wound that you can have, but still, it's not going to break the skin, but it is a problem. Let's take a look at Matthew chapter 26 and verse 67. Oftentimes a contusion is going to be caused by a blunt instrument. For example, if you were hit by a baseball bat, you might not break the arm, but you can have a contusion from that. You can have some bruising and some discoloration. Matthew chapter 26 and verse 67. All right, Steve. Okay, beat him, struck him with the palms of the hands. Nothing there that would indicate that there was any kind of breaking when it comes to the skin, but definitely unpleasant. Second type of wound, when you think about what happened to Jesus, would be a laceration. Let's take a look at 2 passages, one from the Old Testament, one from the New. Isaiah 50, verse 6. You have some time to get back there. Isaiah 50 and verse 6. All right, Gary. And then we'll take a look at Matthew 27, verse 26. Matthew 27, verse 26. Done. Thank you. All right, when we think about a laceration, anybody know what kind of wound that is? All right, a cut, a tear. And this was prophesied, as we see back in the book of Isaiah. Let's take a look at that 50th chapter, Isaiah 50 and verse 6.
I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting.
Okay, the first part of that, would you read that again?
I gave my back to the smiters.
Okay, the smiters, the back. Remember what we said about in 1 Peter chapter 2? Jesus' back, just one big stripe. You couldn't count the lacerations. And then Matthew chapter 27 and verse 26.
Every least he burned was unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified.
Okay. Now, Bonnie, to go back to your question earlier, could you have a beating where you didn't have a laceration? Yeah. But in this case, Jesus has a beating that's not just a beating, but it's a scourging, and the scourging is one where there definitely are lacerations. He's been cut. Chapter 50, verse 6.
It says, and my cheeks to those who plucked out the beard. Did they pull his hair out of his face?
Well, that makes you wonder. At least that would be the thing that I would be inclined to look at there, that as they're trying to show different forms of abuse. What can you do to make this guy more miserable?
I've really thought about that before.
All right, so we have the kind of instrument that would be used, a blunt instrument, to cause contusions. We've talked about the lacerations. Item number 3 would be wounds that actually penetrate. The first two are definitely not pleasant, but when you think about a penetrating wound, you have kind of wound, you know, maybe an ice pick. You were trying to chip ice, and all of a sudden it slipped, and you know, or maybe it was a knife, you're trying to chop some onions and it penetrated you. Let's take a look at Matthew chapter 27, 29 to 30. Anybody there? Matthew 27, 29 and 30.
When they had twisted a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. Then they spat on him and took the reed and struck him on the head.
Okay. I don't know for sure that we know what kind of thorns were used. There have been some people who have made some suggestions. I do know that as you go to the land of Israel, you find that there are a number of thorns, so there certainly would not have been any difficulty in trying to find some thorns and weave them into a crown and put them on. I don't know about you, but even small thorns are not exactly what I'm enthused about. You go out into maybe a briar patch, and whether it's one that comes through the pant leg or it's one that ends up in the finger, just not a very pleasant experience for me. But if you've got some thorns that are maybe an inch or longer, and that ends up snagging your skin or going into the skin, it is a painful thing. So here, a crown of thorns, if that were the only thing Jesus suffered, it would have been bad, but that was not it. He also had some perforations in his body. Let's go back to Psalm 22 and verse 16. We've already seen this indicated based on what we've looked at, but it's also in that Old Testament psalm about Jesus and what he was going to experience on the cross. 22nd Psalm, verse 16. Gary's got it. 22:16 in Psalms.
For dogs have compassed me, the assembly of the wicked have enclosed me, they pierced my hands and my feet.
Okay, again, we talked about that earlier, but now his hands, his feet are being pierced. So it's almost like as you look at these wounds, they get worse and worse and worse. And then there is the incised wound that would be a deep cut from a sharp instrument. It's not just the thorn that goes in a little bit, but now it's actually going into the body in a somewhat deep manner. Two passages from John 19 and John 20. We'll start with John 19 and verse 34, and then we'll flip over and look at John 20 and verse 27. Who wants to read for us that 34th verse in John 19? John 19, 34. All right, Bonnie, back to you. Okay, and then one chapter over, John 20, verse 27, please.
Then he said to Thomas, reach your finger here, and look at my hands, and reach your hand here, and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing.
Okay, if you can put the hand into the side, or you've been pierced by a sword or a spear, What would you say about the depth of the wound? It's going to be a pretty deep wound. It's not something like, well, I was, you know, in the briar patch and I got a couple thorns that, you know, snagged me a little bit, or I've got this little splinter. This is a very, very serious wound. So as you look at Jesus, it spans the full range of wounds. Would you say that we're saved by Jesus' pain?
Say that again.
Would you say that we're saved by Jesus' pain?
Yeah.
So we're not saved by the pain, we're saved by the blood. But you would think that, and again, there is a connection, as Bonnie mentioned, but as bad as the pain was, that's not the basis for salvation. The basis was the shed blood. But when you think about the pain that was necessary to offer that blood on our behalf, it really is magnificent that someone was willing to do that, not for a friend, but for people who were his greatest enemies. And that would be because of sin. Let me give you this quick point, and then maybe there's something that you want to add or ask. There is, when you look at Jesus, a lot of emphasis on the Lord coming in the flesh. Now, that may not be too significant for us, but when you look at the Bible, especially the books written by John, 1 John chapter 4 and verse 2, 2 John chapter 2 and verse 7, John said that there were some people in that day and time who denied something. He said there are these guys who are running around, and they're saying Jesus did not come in the flesh. Those fellows seem to be people who were Gnostics. Gnostic is a way of saying that they had special knowledge. At least they claimed that they had special knowledge. They claimed that they had special insight. And one of the things that they claimed was Jesus didn't come in the flesh. Well, when you start looking at these passages which talk about the wounds of Jesus, the passages which talk about he died on the cross, he's not spirit, he really is flesh. So one of the things that you can pick up, and I think one of the things that probably was used in the first century was, look, Jesus was on the cross. You have all these wounds. These wounds are associated with flesh. Jesus did come in the flesh. He really was someone. It wasn't some kind of spirit that came and showed up. He was God in the flesh. Thoughts that you want to add or ask over what we've talked about tonight?
I have a question, but it's not quite related, so if there's any other questions, I should go first.
Okay. Anybody else want to toss something out? Well, Gary, I guess you've got a couple minutes.
If the body of Christ died on the cross, where was his spirit or divinity for the next 3 days?
Well, you have in Acts chapter 2 a statement about Jesus descending into Hades. So, help me understand the question a little bit. When you say his divinity... Well, let's take a look and see if Acts 2 answers the question. It's going to be, I would say, about verse 23, but we'll need to double check that. Peter tells them that David died and his... Yeah, let's go down to 29. Brethren, I may say to you freely of the patriarch David that he both died and was buried, and his tomb is with us unto this day. Being therefore prophet of God, and knowing that God has sworn with an oath to him that of the fruit of the loins he would set one upon his throne, he, foreseeing this, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that neither he, that would be Jesus, was left unto where? Hades. Nor did his flesh see corruption. This Jesus did God raise up. Peter thus affirmed that Jesus went to Hades. Now, if you want to, well, I don't want to modify your question. Do you want to add to that or not?
No, go ahead.
All right. Tim, do you want to add to that?
No,